This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, Episode 4, for Thursday, April 23rd, 2009, The Humpback Compromise. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours Greenwich Mean Time. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Music Store. Say welcome to Out of Line After Hours, and we've got a terrific show here today. And joining me, as always, is Jason Vines. And Jason, last week you told us a little bit about Forgotten Harvest, about how you guys gather all kinds of food in the Detroit metropolitan area and feed like a gazillion poor people now who badly need that help. But you guys are doing a fundraiser this weekend. Tell us about it for anybody who's in this area that might be able to get to it.
Go to Ticketmaster. You can get a $25 ticket. That means 150 meals for people that are hungry. Kevin Meaney, comedian that I actually warmed up in the...
But tell us what the event is.
It's Comedy Night. I was getting to that.
Okay.
Comedy Night, and it's at the Music Hall in downtown Detroit, a great venue, by the way. We should have 700-800 people there. It's our biggest fundraiser.
I heard Kevin Meaney on the radio this morning. The guy had me laughing out loud on the way to work, which is a great way to start your day.
Incredibly funny. And we talk about hunger is no laughing matter, but we all need to laugh, especially now. So people can go on the website, www.forgottenharvest.org. They can get tickets there. They can go to Ticketmaster, help hungry people, see a little bit about Kevin Meaney, incredibly funny comedian from Boston. Many may know him from the Uncle Buck TV show. They tried to do an Uncle Buck TV show that didn't work because you can't match John Candy. But he's been on Broadway in Hairspray. He's a phenomenal comedian. You can not only bring yourself or a spouse or a friend, you can bring your kids to him too. He's clean enough for everybody. A little tacky enough for everybody, too. So he's a very, very funny comedian.
Cool. That's great. And, of course, joining us is Peter DeLorenzo, Mr. Auto Extremist. And, Peter, I want to get into what you were writing about on your column this week at AutoExtremist.com. Just give us a brief synopsis right now, and then we'll get into this discussion later on.
It was about Porsche walking away from 60 years of heritage and repositioning the company for the new automotive global future, which is centered in Shanghai. And they're going to build four-door sedans that look like stretched AMC.
You don't like the Panamera.
No, I do not.
Well, we're going to get into that because, yeah. Since they officially unveiled the car.
Even though
they've been sneaking the whole thing out. And joining us by Skype tonight is the editor-in-chief of Road and Track magazine, Matt DeLorenzo. Matt, welcome aboard.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Now, first thing I got to start off with saying, it's the obvious question. People ask me this all the time. Are Peter DeLorenzo and Matt DeLorenzo related? So fill us in.
We are cousins.
No, we're not. No, we're cousins.
Yeah, they touched each other when they were five.
So, Matt, what's new with Road and Track? Anything new and exciting?
Well, we're working hard on kind of reformulating the magazine a little bit. We're putting more of the track back into the name. We've been broadening our motorsports coverage, and that's been a positive development for us. We've brought on guest columnists every month, and so far the reaction's been pretty good.
Cool. Well, let's get back to this Porsche Panamera. Peter, why don't you like this thing?
Well, you know, as I've, I didn't like the Cayenne, and of course Porsche proved me wrong by making boatloads of money on it.
Say, but their dealers, they tell me.
Yeah, they did for a while, though. They're not doing so well right now. But my big thing was about image and branding. This is the Porsche that mirrored its founder's principles of lightweight, agility, performance above all, and yet I think it's been taken over by the money men who just say, look, we can put that crest on a tea kettle and we're going to make money. And I've always had a problem with that. I don't care what the brand is. Porsche in particular, I've had a few of them over the years, many 911s. I never actually owned them. I never had them long enough. I kind of rented them while I had them. And you know, they were great cars. I just think they've lost their way. And I think this Panamera is clearly an indication that Porsche really doesn't care about its heritage anymore. They can talk about it and PR it all they want and say that, oh, well, somewhere back in our vault is a four-door Porsche that we built in 1928 or 1932 or something. But that's all BS. This is clearly calculated to take advantage of the big shift in the automotive market, which we'll talk about in another show, which it's no longer North America.
Right.
It's the Far East, and the center of the universe is now, the automotive universe is the Far East. And four-door sedans are very big in China because it's prestigious to be driven around in China. And Wendell and Wedeking made sure he fit in the back of the Panamera, which is why it looks like a humpback whale or a four-door stretch pacer, depending on your point of view. And I know it's a moneymaker. I know why they're doing it. I don't have a problem with profits. But, boy, they've just pretty much walked away from whatever the brand once stood for, and it just bothers me.
Matt, you got to weigh in on this. What's your take on the Panamera?
I couldn't disagree more.
Well, fill us in why.
They would be walking away from their mark if they gave up on the 911 and didn't do a Boxster and didn't do a Carrera GT. I think the brand is flexible enough to support a four-door. And you look, Aston Martin is going to do a repeat. I haven't heard a peep from people saying, gee, they shouldn't be doing that car. That it's absolutely crucial that the Panamera handle and drive like a Porsche. Now, you know, whether or not they can do that, you know, there are people now who poo-pooed the 928 who look back and go with fondness on the 928. So I don't believe that the brand is so carved in stone that they can't do a car like this. But I do agree with Peter on the whale aspect of the styling. I wish it were a little bit sleeker. But the fact that it's got four doors instead of two and the engine's up front really doesn't – those to me aren't defining what a Porsche should be. What defines a Porsche for me is a car that's going to go like a scalded bat out of hell. So.
Yeah, I remember years ago there was a joke. I mean, before my time, there was a joke in Ford Finance. What's the purpose of a gray iron foundry? And people go, to make gray iron? And the joke went, no, it's to make money. And so what's the purpose of a Cayenne or a Panamera? It's to make money. And
well, they've become the Alfred Sloan. They've adopted the old GM philosophy is we're not in the business to make cars. We're in the business to make money. Now, when's the last time Porsche won Le Mans? They walked away from going after winning Le Mans overall to develop the Cayenne. Now, if they had developed a small, lightweight, sort of a Baja thing you could drive in the street, which snarled like a 911 and really was a wild-looking thing, it was light and unlike anything else you could buy, I'd say, fine, build all the four-wheel things you can come up with. Instead, what do? They build this monster, ungainly 5,500-pound SUV that was no different than the American SUVs. Yeah, okay, it's got a Porsche motor, and it's got the crest, and they're charging 90 grand for it. Yeah, that's different. But they went way off the tracks with that, and now they're going to do the four-door, and hey, you know, it's just not the same Porsche anymore, so it's over with.
I agree with Peter. While we're in the valley of the shadow of death of the auto industry, you think you don't care about your brand, and many don't. But when times get good again, brand values matter. And when people know your brand and what it stands for, it matters. So they'll make profits in the short term, and it'll hurt them overall. completely.
Now, in the new Chinese market, maybe Porsche, that's what they want to stand for.
You know, who says brands can't evolve?
Oh, of course they can evolve. I mean,
if the purists would have their way, the 911 still would be air cooled. It would still have mechanical lifters, and it wouldn't have all wheel drive.
Yeah, but you're talking about technology evolving. That's different than what your core value of your brand does, and what it stands for. And you should have technology evolve to give your customers who what they expect from that brand to give them the best. But when you start pimping yourself, Mercedes-Benz with EML, they say, you know, they did all the research, and everybody in their brand that owned a Mercedes wanted an SUV, so they said, we'll give them an SUV. What they gave them, that first ML, was a minivan, kind of shaped like an SUV, and they put the biggest damn Mercedes badge they could put on it, and the car was a piece of crap. It really hurt their scores for quality and hurt their image for a while. The subsequent ones got better. But when you start pimping yourself, you'll pay sooner or later.
Yeah, actually, I can see Porsche doing a Panamera more than I can see it doing a Cayenne and stay true to its heritage. But, you're starting to convince me, Peter. They got to stay true to their roots in the sense that they are the ultimate sports car company.
Well, they're not anymore.
Well, I guess they're not.
The reason they walked away from Le Mans, they couldn't afford with Audi compete with Audi and people like that, and the money that went from that program went to the Carrera GT, and then they raced in the ALMS series the last 3 years and kicked everybody's butt in LMP2. So, I don't see it.
Well, the one thing I will say though is, as a business, it's hard to argue with Porsche.
They're
the most profitable car company in the world. They're in the process of taking over Volkswagen.
You just said it. Wendell and Wedeking is taking this company from excellence is expected. There is no substitute. That's the old Porsche. Now, all their public statements always revolve, we are the most profitable car company in the world. That says it all right there, and that's fine. I got nothing against profits, but the point of my column was, in this new industrial automotive age in China, Porsche will not stand for any of that stuff. Porsche is the Panamera and forward.
It's the latest bling.
Yeah,
Good point. Well, speaking of brands, it's time to rate a brand. And Jason, which is the first brand that we're going to rate tonight?
The big dog, Toyota.
Toyota, hold it up for the camera. And who wants to start off with this? We always do this, thumbs up or thumbs down for a brand. Where do you think Toyota is? Would you give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down right now?
As a brand, I would give them a thumbs down right now. I think they're a successful business, and I think if you want to talk about profits over emotion and that kind of thing that Peter was talking about with Porsche, Toyota is the epitome of that. And I think they need to get back into building some emotive cars, something like a Celica or a rear drive small affordable sports car, which I understand they're developing with Subaru. But I think they need to have a little bit more life. And I think maybe they've learned a lesson that perhaps they can't, and no manufacturer can be the kind of Goliaths that we've become accustomed to, building everything from heavy-duty pickups down to entry-level city cars.
Hey, what you just said about Subaru is interesting. I hadn't heard that. What do you know about it?
Well, they're working with Subaru to build, we call it the Toyobaru. And it's basically a rear drive platform, small sports car that's like the old Corolla, the rear drive Corollas. And in the Japanese domestic market, they really want this car back because young kids could be able to afford them and drift them and that kind of thing. And if they bring that car back, I think that's the kind of shot that Toyota needs. And certainly it wouldn't hurt Subaru to have a small entry like that as well.
Boxer engine or no?
I think for the Subaru, it would have a boxer engine, but I think in the Toyota, they'd go with one of their own motors.
Wow, sounds like a complicated platform.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's one of those things. Toyota laid it off to Subaru to do most of the heavy lifting on the development, and they'll just come in. And I don't know if it'll be shared production somewhere, but we have kind of a spy drawing of it going into the next issue.
Cool. Okay.
Go ahead, Jason.
The greatest bank in the history of mankind and the biggest snow job to the media of all time. I give it a huge thumbs up. They snowed the mainstream media.
As I call them, the master manipulators.
while they were bringing out the world's greatest car, the Prius, and losing money on every one, they tried to flood the market with trucks. And while the domestic automakers were called stupid by Congress, these guys were just as stupid because they knew where the profits were in SUVs and pickup trucks. They've blown their trucks a couple times. They just couldn't quite get it right. And I don't know if they did it on purpose not to get it right on their trucks.
I don't believe that. Some say that. I don't buy that.
Regardless, they're masters at their image. The losing money on the Prius all these years, and maybe they make money now, but losing money was a brilliant stroke because they decided that would help build their image, and it did.
Right.
You know, Peter calls them shiny, happy people and things like that on Auto Extremist. When the dust clears of the debacle we're in the industry, they're going to be big winners going forward. They're losing money now like everybody else is. You can't make money in 9.9 million market. And the global market kind of crashing too, and all the players still in there. But when some of the players are thrown out, and that's what's going to happen, we'll talk about that soon with Chrysler and part of GM, they're poised. They have a great image. Quality, 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 quality. Their cars are boring. The Solara, I still believe, is uglier than the Aztek. It is one of the ugliest cars ever on the road, but they don't get hit for it. They don't get hit for anything, so... Big, huge thumbs up now going forward.
See, I give them a thumbs up, but it's not an enthusiastic one because they've lost their way in the last 5 years. And I'm not talking about the company. I'm talking about the brand now. Their quality has suffered, although most of the public hasn't picked up on that. But it's not the knight in shining armor it quite was. I think they've made big improvements in their design. I don't think they're nearly as boring as they had been. I think the Camry is a pretty interesting design study right now.
Decent.
But, you know, they created Scion, and we'll get into rating Scion later in the show, because they're getting Oldsmobile disease. You know, the boomers grew up with Toyota. So many boomers drive Toyotas. Guess what? Their kids absolutely do not want to drive like no kids in any time in the history of the automobile have ever wanted to do, and that's drive the car that the old man or mom drives. And since so many have Toyotas, Toyota's on the verge here. I'm giving it a thumbs up, but it's not an enthusiastic one. And if they're not careful, it could be a thumbs down in another design generation or two.
Yeah, I'm with you, John. And I, you know, really the media job they've done, I mean, unbelievable. They are the master manipulators. I mean, they could put a positive spin on, you know, Toyota. It just doesn't matter what goes wrong with it.
Recalling cars.
Yeah, recalling cars. Oh, it was a story on Yahoo for 30 seconds. If a domestic was recalling, it would be pummeled and beaten to death over days. Toyota, it's just a blip, and they keep right on going. But, you know, they misjudged the whole truck thing. They built that huge plant in San Antonio, and they said, boy, we're going to make us some money out of some pick-em-up trucks, and it didn't work out. They overextended themselves. They built too many factories. They expanded too much. So they've been proved to be pretty fallible. Their Teflon kimono's gotten in a ringer lately. So I'll give them a half a thumb, and it's sort of bent because they could go either way. I mean, odds are, like Jason says, they'll recover quickly and just crank up the machine some more. But, you know, they're in a difficult place right now.
Yeah, they haven't been in what they're in right now. And Somebody just sent in a line that says they're the leader in perceived quality in caps, and that's a good point.
Bob Lutz is writing us?
Yeah.
Excellent. Sadly.
Yeah. Do Bob first. You're good at it.
All right. Well, let's see. What should we get to next here? We got to go back to this issue that you raised in your column last week. And we talked a little bit on the show, but I want to get back to it because I've been trying this idea out on people since last week's show. And, man, it just is like lighting a fire. And that is, you know, as GM goes into bankruptcy, which it seems like for sure it's going to now, should they drop the name General Motors altogether?
Matt?
Well, I don't think so, because GM is not a brand. I mean, they do have, they're in the news and everything. But
well, would you pull that GM badge off all the cars?
In a second. I mean, that's the only thing. I mean, they sell Cadillacs, they sell Buicks, they sell Chevys. They don't sell a GM. So to me, that isn't, I would de-emphasize the mark, definitely. You know, and I'd get rid of GM, Goodwrench, and all that other stuff. But I don't think it has a, you know, somebody buying a Corvette doesn't say, hey, I'm buying a GM or a Cadillac, I'm buying a GM. So I think the two are divorced somewhat.
I agree totally. Let's say that right now we had a Chevrolet car company, Cadillac car company, Buick car company, and GMC, and they're all failing, but let's put them together, but let's give them a different name so that each brand isn't impacted by the bad news of the new company. I'd call it General Motors. So I think it's good cover for them so that the bad news about the corporation doesn't necessarily go on the brand every time. And I talked about this last week. The problem with the Chrysler brand is whenever there was a Chrysler recall, it could be a Jeep recall, but Chrysler Corporation announced a recall of Jeep vehicles. It hurt the Chrysler brand more than it hurt the Jeep brand. Hmm. And so, but then again, we said last week, nobody would call themselves General Motors. What a lame name. But I wouldn't change it. I don't, or if I would, okay. For those that are thinking of changing it, that have written in, what would you call it?
Well, somebody suggested to me Government Motors. He says you don't have to change the logo.
Congressional Motors.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by this idea. I mean, there's no question GM's name is mud in this country right now.
It's only two words associated with GM in the media. See the blue logo over Brian Williams' shoulder? There's two words, bankruptcy and bad. There's just... And you know, so yeah, yank the GM thing off the cars and do what you can to promote, push the brands up, pull GM back. But you know, eventually, if they're really starting over and this is this new car company, you know, maybe they should call it something else.
Well, here's one of the problems I have is GM is marketing GM right now. They're doing this, let's put on our game hats or comeback
rally hats.
I hate these ads. I can't stand these ads at all. And they're lumping everything in together. Hey, we're GM. We're doing this. Come on. And to me, it is beyond stupidity. And I think they're hurting themselves. And that's why I'm intrigued about this idea of dropping the name General Motors. And believe me, it pains me to see or even say that, because I'd really like to see them turn it around and come roaring back. But when? 2 decades, 3 decades, 4 decades from now? I mean, how long does it take to live that bad image down before you can bring it back? Maybe it can be done in a fair amount of time, a short amount of time, but I don't see it happening. And especially the way they're advertising right now, I don't see where they're helping themselves.
Yeah, I agree.
They seem to be... Go ahead, Matt.
Well, I was just saying they got to get away from the corporate advertising because the corporation is in trouble. They got to get back to the brand advertising. And they can't call it the new GM, like, as Jason knows, the new Chrysler Corporation. How many of those did we have?
Four. What... Yeah, the fact is, with the way the media works, and this is not a shot at the media, but if they were to change their name tomorrow, the opening paragraph of the story, GM has decided to change its name, and then all the boilerplate stuff would come in. This is in the midst of the company failing, blah, blah, blah. So they get, no matter what you do, you get the hell beat out of you. The ads, I'm getting tired as well of the pity ads. Americans don't want pity ads, right. and there's we all know the term pity something else. We don't want that either. So talk about, they've got great products, the best products they've ever had. They got a lot of stuff coming. You guys have all seen it. You guys have been in it. You drive a Cadillac. It's a fabulous car. I drive a Saturn. I love this car. Talk about the product leadership and not the pity train.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Sell the product. They're trying to sell a deal. They're trying to sell the fact that they're in trouble. They're trying to sell you to please come help us out. It's like, for what?
Well,
sell me the product.
And we know from all of the surveys, Americans don't give a damn right now. They say, most Americans say, 60% say let them fail, the companies.
Right.
They're stupid to vote that way because they don't realize, or hopefully soon they'll see the impact of this, the impact of these companies. You let them fail and the nation starts to crumble. But stop this type of pity is, woe is me, pity us, and start talking about the strengths and we're going to get through this and here's what we have to offer you now and tomorrow.
You know, to me,
that's a key point about offering what we have to offer now. Because I'm kind of concerned about the Volt, because they're, and granted, it's terrific that they're doing this vehicle. It shows some leadership in technology, but they could be in a case of overpromising and under-delivering on the car, and they can't take that chance.
Well,
right,
let's say the Volt delivers brilliantly. It is the most heavily advertised car in the history of the industry that you cannot buy. This thing's still, what, a year and a half away, almost 2 years away before we can buy it. And that's all that they seem to be able to advertise is the Volt.
The Cobalt
Volt,
SS ad.
Let's say that again.
Give me a Cobalt SS ad.
Yeah, but the fact is, and the truth is, GM has more cars that get 30 miles per gallon or better than anyone else. Their pickup truck is the best pickup truck on fuel economy and has a great drivetrain. The F-Series is a great pickup truck, too. You lead in almost every segment you're in. Your quality is stellar. The Buick is way up there. It leads the category. Cadillac's up there. Talk about what you have. No one wants to buy. No one's going to go, honey, let's take a loan out and buy these guys. I don't think they're going to be around tomorrow, but let's help them out.
Right.
It's not going to work. Be proud of what you've got here. You're going to get through this, by the way. Obama has said he wants GM to survive.
Well, I'll tell you, and I'm not kidding, Barack and Michelle are going to have to do a fireside info chat, an hour-long info chat on national TV, pushing American cars. I mean, literally, because if people don't start buying them now, I don't care what you have. I don't care if you have a Volt that levitates. It won't matter. They've got to start buying cars in the next 6 months, or it doesn't matter.
I saw on the way here, R.L. Polk came out with a study today that said 72% of Americans they surveyed would consider a domestic vehicle. I find that startlingly high. Maybe the fact that the country's kind of coming together, maybe. You know, Obama's numbers are way up, and people are looking at being Americans again. They're sick of the Iranian president coming out and acting like a total ass, and Chavez and stuff like that, and looking inward. Could this be an opportunity for whoever survives in the domestic industry? This could be a gold mine. I mean, I was startled by those numbers, 72%.
Yeah. If that's accurate, that's an eye-opener, no question about it. Okay, well, we're halfway through the show. Time to rate another brand. Jason, what's up?
Ski-ion.
The Scion brand. Matt, you want to start with that? Thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumb sideways?
I give them a thumbs up. I like the brand. We just recently had a long-term XV. It's a real grown-up car now. It's a lot of fun. I saw the IQ at the New York show. I was impressed. I think I was kind of a Scion skeptic, and I think they've done a fairly credible job in trying to tap into a new market. whether or not they really needed to do it. I mean, what they're trying to do is make Toyota seem young and hip. Well, I don't think there's any rub off on the Toyota brand, but what they've been able to do within the self-contained Scion universe has been a pretty solid effort.
I'll go next then. I give it a thumbs down. I think Scion's failing as a brand for what it was intended to do. I agree with you. XB, cool car. IQ, are they going to bring that in as a Scion? Or are they just testing the waters?
They showed it at the New York show as a Scion.
As a Scion, okay. But here's what I'm getting at. Scion was created because Toyota's getting Oldsmobile disease. It is your father's car. And so they created Scion to appeal to a young, hip crowd. And I think they got a little greedy, and instead of having this really cool, almost secretive, boutique kind of car company or car brand, they started to really expand the line. They went after more sales. They started selling to people like me, middle-aged, you know. And I've been watching their sales. And even last year when gas hit $4 a gallon, they weren't doing all that well. I mean, they weren't setting the world on fire. And I'm not convinced Scion is really got the legs to make it unless they can really tweak this brand. I give it a thumbs down.
I agree. With everything you said, so I don't, nothing to add at the moment.
I hate this brand because I'm too old. When it came out, I just looked at the vehicles and said, those are just stupid. And then my boys who were teenagers were like, that's really cool. And so I realized I have no sense of this market. It hasn't done even close to what they wanted to. I still have a belief in that Toyota is the greatest marketer of cars in the world, that they can figure out that they screwed up, and I'll give it a sideways vote.
Okay. Well, I want to get into a topic that Matt and I were chatting a little bit about yesterday, doing our Skype test to make sure everything worked. And this is one really that plays to your strengths, Jason.
American Idol?
No.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
No, Dancing with the Stars. No,
I know everything about that.
No, I thought you were going to sing or dance for us. No, what about the future of auto shows? Where are they going? And the reason we got into this yesterday is car companies are pulling out left, right, and backwards on auto shows all over the world. Mm-hmm. There's even talk now that the Tokyo show might even be canceled altogether. The kind of money that car companies were pouring into their displays, you know, they're cutting it back to almost cars on a carpet right now.
No, GM did cut it back. The Detroit show was like grim. Oh.
So what's the future of auto shows? Are we just in a lull now because of the economic situation?
I think we're in that valley of death. It's still a great thing where millions of people, either hundreds of thousands or millions, depending like on the New York show or Chicago, can go and see all the cars they want to see. People are still enthralled to go to auto shows. I think Chicago still did really well. Despite some crappy weather in Detroit, quite a few people showed up for that, and it's a captive market here. I hope they're not gone. Certainly the automakers are going to pull back. We're going to have a reshuffling of the auto shows, and you may see more regional auto shows that are cheaper to put on. We used to call them the second and third tier. They may become the first tier and get rid of the big ones that are so expensive and they have so much media coverage. But it is a great one-stop shopping place to go. And part of me says, and maybe I'm acting too old, I hope we don't lose that, because if we lose that, we lose the passion of the industry. So certainly we have this complete cluster, you know what, in Detroit with the Cobo Hall.
Let's not even get into that.
Where that goes.
That's worth a whole show unto itself.
And hopefully we can get on some where we can use every expletive we know. But these are shows. L.A. gets a million people. New York gets a million plus. Chicago gets a million people. If you're a dealer and you can get a million people to show your wares, that's fabulous. By the way, in the best light. Not in a showroom, not driving down the street in the perfect lighting with hot babes and hot guys. And the best way with the information there, I don't think they're gone. I think we're in a lull.
Yeah, I think we're in a lull, too. I think I was on CNBC one day, and the anchors, it was this subject exactly, and the anchor said, wait a minute, we got to have our auto show because they're in New York. He said, that's the only time we can see all this stuff. And I used to say the New Yorkers, enthusiasts in New York weren't really enthusiasts, but I've changed 180.
Right.
If you're into cars and you live in the New York metropolitan area, you are a hardcore car enthusiast. My hat's off to you guys in New York and that whole Eastern Seaboard. You got to be into it. And, you know, I just think if you pull that show away from those people, I mean, I think there will always be a place for auto shows. I think the map will change, you know. Now all of a sudden the Shanghai show is the show. Tokyo's like looking at their watches saying, well, gee, maybe we ought to cut this off. So I think auto shows are, we're in a lull, but there's always going to be a place for auto shows. People still have to walk up to a vehicle and look at it. You can look at on the internet all you want. You have to see a vehicle in the flesh. I really believe that.
And would you go to a refrigerator show? No.
No.
I mean, the big shows are auto shows, the electronic shows.
Fashion.
And fashion and porn. Four great parts of America. So we'll have that.
And Matt, you were saying you thought Geneva's the best show in the world right now.
Hands down. I think it's the Survivor. The high rollers come there to actually buy cars. There was still a good amount of energy there. The manufacturers put the money into the displays. And, you know, it has risen above everybody else. And unfortunately, Detroit, as much as I love the show, has fallen second tier. I mean, there are some New York this year, I think, was, you know, could New York could become the premier show in North America if Detroit doesn't watch it.
Well, John was saying L.A. would become the...
That's my argument. I think if Detroit loses it, and it hasn't lost it yet, but it's on the verge of losing it, my guess...
I think,
go ahead.
My view, though, is that there are three... At an auto show, there are three shows. There's an industry conclave, there's the public days, and there's the media show. And even though L.A. is somewhat of a media capital, it's not an automotive media capital, and it's not a money capital like New York is. So I just don't see the press infrastructure and the people coming to make this show the premier show that could be the be-all and end-all show for North America. I think Chicago's got the best facility. The convention center here in L.A. is, you know, you got two different halls separated. And actually, the neighborhood, I'm more frightened in the area around the convention center in L.A. than I am around Cobo.
That's because you're a girly man. All right? No, Chicago can't do it. Chicago would love it and has been pimping for it for years. But right. It has a Detroit disease. It's cold in Chicago in February.
Yeah.
So L.A., you know, it's November.
L.A., you get the sunshine. And
well, you know, but you know, Geneva, the weather there is spring. It's not exactly, summertime there either.
No, there's you fly into Geneva, there's snow on the Alps. And if I was going to put my money down, I'd put it on New York. And with the organizers there who are badgers, they will fight tooth and nail to keep it in New York. People will fly in from media, like to fly into New York from Europe, from Asia as well. You know,
the only reason I argue for L.A., and I'm not arguing for it, I'm thinking this is where it's going to go, is you've got, what, how many car companies in the L.A. area now, Matt, with headquarters, 7 or 8 of them?
Hyundai.
Yeah.
Something like that. And you've got, what, like 15 design studios there? I'm telling you, I've talked to the automakers out there, Toyota, Honda, Mazda, Hyundai. They would love to have L.A. as the preeminent show in North America.
I disagree because it's sort of preaching to the choir out here. And if you look at Nissan said that they're not going to get involved in any shows. You know, and they even blew town to go to Tennessee. But, Honda didn't have, a lot of the homeboys here, they tend to like to do stuff in New York or Chicago or Detroit.
Well, they like to come to Detroit because this is where the media is.
Right.
And the only thing that distinguishes the Detroit show is that we get all the international media and all the international executives. That's the only thing that makes the Detroit show worth what it is. It's not Cobo Hall. It's definitely not Cobo Hall in Detroit
or the,
January.
Or the hotels.
Or the hotels.
So note to city council for the city of Detroit, the only jewel you're talking about is the fact that 6,000 journalists from around the world come to the show. It's not the building. It's not the weather. It's not the hotels. Stop being so stupid.
Hey, we got a comment here from somebody on the chat, and we don't get to the chat enough to bring that into the show. And he says, cars on a carpet are okay, but I miss the grand display. He says, I remember one manufacturer that had cars displayed on an ice floor. I think that was Mercedes, or was that Audi?
No, it was Mercedes, and they had, during the press preview, they had these skaters. And so this was when it was part of Daimler Chrysler. And then during the rehearsals, people were falling on their ass. It was horrible.
But you've put on some of the best reveals in the history of this industry. In fact, my all-time favorite reveal was
Jason is the king.
Jason's the king.
The king of the dead practice.
Well, what was
it's
that
a
clown,
lost art.
The clown troupe that you brought in for the Chrysler
Slava, act? Slava the clown.
My God, that is still...
I get credit for it. Was my team, Rick Deno, the folks at Clear Blue, that found these guys. It was the best press conference ever. We had a standing ovation from about a third of the press there. To get a standing ovation from media.
Right.
It was
We're hard-bitten cynics who generally hate that kind of stuff, but I loved it. And what that really showed me, and a lot of the other stuff that you guys did, is we haven't scratched the surface of where car shows could go. And I mean, and these things should be going on in the public days, not just for the media.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, I keep arguing, it's an auto show. It's an auto show, damn it.
Yeah, it's not an auto. Let's look at our watch and see what's next on the schedule.
One of the things we did.
And here on the screen, too, we've got your cattle roundup, which I guess was kind of your swan song, Jason.
Yeah, but it's funny. It was after I had left that it was pulled off by, again, Rick Deno and the team. And the fact is, Chrysler over the last year and a half has the leadership have poo-pooed it. We're not going to do stuff like that anymore. The fact is, Chrysler, the Dodge Ram got two or three times the coverage of the F-Series for that show. And I know you said some nice things about it. I appreciate that. But we had the cows were humping because that's what they do. And it made it just multiply the impact. It wasn't planned for that to do it. But I believe we have to get back to that type of thing, not just so I can get reemployed, but so that we bring back the passion of the industry. And one of the
things, the fun.
I mean,
going to a show, it's like you're saying, people should say, oh, my God, let's fly to Detroit and catch the show.
One of the things we did at Nissan.
Or whatever, fill in the blank city. Right. I'm just using Detroit as an example.
When we launched the Xterra at the Detroit show, we had that giant backpack. The reason we did the giant backpack, because the vehicle had a backpack, and we gave out backpacks, but we wanted the public, when they came there, to enjoy what the media did. And we had kids saying, I want to go see the giant backpack. So, and I think the auto companies were trying to go more for it as we went along to so that the public could enjoy what the media did. I was saddened, I was crushed, when Chrysler this past year at the Detroit show got rid of the Jeep fountain.
Mm-hmm.
This was the coolest thing. It made families stay in the Jeep display longer. So this group of all of these auto companies have taken the very soul out of the car buying experience at auto shows.
Well, GM's display at Detroit was a disaster. I mean, it was literally acres and acres of carpet and cars arrayed about. It was like you were at a car lot. It was horrible. I mean, I was just like, boy, guys, you know, I know you're not trying to show Washington that you're spending money, you know, needlessly, but give us something. And they didn't.
Matt, what do you like at car shows?
Well, I like the press conferences, but for a different insider kind of reason, because I know how hard guys like Jason work all year to please their bosses and make sure they look good and all that other stuff. And I always look forward to the auto show because that's one time out of the year where they would put on some stupid show and get some high and mighty exec to put on some short pants or do something totally ridiculous and degrading. And I knew they were doing it just to get back at those guys for the way they treated them, the PR guys, the way that they treated them throughout the entire year.
You've cracked the code, Gary.
It's got to be a fine line between having an executive do something where they're totally out of their natural way of acting, and it comes off as cool or comes off as totally stupid.
Well, I thought, and I wasn't at the company at the time, the best one, the small one I saw that was the best was when Bob Eaton did the smoke and mirrors with actually a cigar. I think they were introducing a new version of the minivans. It was making fun of ourselves, and it was well done. The worst one in the history was the Corvette back in 97 at the Detroit show. They had these magicians in L.A. supposedly transporting the car. It was every orifice of the body joke. It was so bad. I mean, at one point, I was sitting next to my boss, Bud Liebler, going, they haven't done a fart joke yet. And right there, they did a fart joke. And I'm like, God, this is an all-time low in press conferences. But then, you know, what was fun in these shows is we would be fun, excited about the industry, and then you go to the Germans who would, we must tell you what we are selling, and they'd go on forever and ever.
Oh, they read acres of text, and here's the sales figures, and here's the earnings figures, and it's like, hey, guys, I'm reading along with you. You know, we don't need to hear this in a German accent.
So it was brutal. You know, sometimes I was at a Mercedes press conference a couple years ago, I think 2008 show, where I think it was, or 2007, 40 minutes into the press conference before they showed the vehicle.
Well, and Mercedes are always the quintessential, like, the world revolves around us, and no other car companies really exist, so you will now pay attention.
Hey, enough auto show stuff. Time to rate a brand. Jason, what's up?
Lexus.
Okay, Peter, let's go to you then.
The favorite brand of soulless Autobots the world over.
Right.
Little appeal to me personally, but you cannot argue with their success. They basically forged this customer first sales shtick at the dealers that people lap up. They're just now starting to get a little more adventurous in their designs. But, you know, I'll give it a grudging thumb up. There's nothing there for me. I mean, the brand does nothing for me.
Yeah. What do you think, Jason?
When I left Ford, I said, oh, we can buy anything we want. I took my wife down to Mead Lexus, and we drove the big sedan, and we drove around Franklin and so forth. It was the boringest car I've ever been in my life. A great business model, though. They treat their customers really well.
Yeah, they've done a superb job at that.
The great master imitator of Mercedes-Benz, once in a while having a little bit of a high performance, the new crossover, what's considered the first crossover, the RX. I heard a review the other day. I think a colleague of ours who was on our first show, Jeff Gilbert, said it's way too much crap on it. The most overrated brand I've ever seen in my life, and a big thumbs up again. That just, they get people coming back and coming back and coming back. I've seen so many Lexus driving around Detroit in the suburbs, it just makes my head spin. And if they can do it here, they'll do it everywhere. I don't want a boring Toyota. I'd like the luxury brand.
I think sideways. I think they've done a good job in building luxury cars for people who like cars as appliances. The ISF thing I don't really get. So they're trying to copy BMW, M, and all that other stuff. And I don't think they've been ultimately successful yet. They don't know what they want to be.
They just want to make money.
And they're doing really well at that.
There's nothing wrong with that. I admire Lexus. I admire what Lexus has done. But I think they're vulnerable here because, I think 60% of their sales is the RX?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's.
And now everyone's gunning for the RX. You've got a new Cadillac SRX.
Which is
that looks
really,
pretty good.
That's going to be really strong.
Which is why Cadillac and GM should talk about the product.
Yeah, right. Another reason why, although that one's not in the showrooms yet. And Audi's doing a pretty interesting ad right now with, I think it's the Q5.
Oh, that's a hugely successful ad.
And, you know, it's these kids running out of school, and their moms are there to pick them up, or maybe dads. And it's just one long line.
Silver Lexus.
Of, of beige RXs.
Silver.
Then somebody
beige.
Pulls
Silver.
Up.
Silver.
I think they're beige.
They're platinum.
But anyway, the point is, everyone's now gunning for the RX. And if Toyota loses its lock on that segment, you've just broken the back of the Lexus brand, I think. I think. So I give it a thumbs up. I'm just saying they better be careful. They better be aware of this stuff.
Yeah, they still call that the original crossover, and I'll put my old Chrysler hat on. That's a lie. The original crossover was the Grand Cherokee.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was unibody, and it was an SUV, yet a... So,
well, maybe.
I'd fight
I think
that
the original crossover was the Aztec concept of the Detroit Auto.
Crossover to ugliness.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting down to the end. There's some news that broke today that we ought to get to as well. And, you know, the New York Times is running an article right now that Chrysler is going to file for bankruptcy next week. The Obama administration is guaranteeing the union's pension and health care. Unsure what's going to happen with the bankers and the bondholders and all that. But, Jason, you spent a lot of your career at Chrysler. What do you think of all this?
Well, I got a note from Chrysler at 7:10. While we believe it's important to keep all options open, we'll continue to work through the end of the month to secure support and reach a successful conclusion. So the media is reporting it right. Chrysler has not said, no, we're not filing for bankruptcy next week via the Treasury. They have not denied it.
They haven't denied it.
They haven't denied it, which right now, if you're not denying it,
that
you're doing it.
You're doing it, right.
Maybe it's the right thing. There are many that argue it should have happened in December or November or whatever. This is sad. This is sad for a couple reasons. No one's going to buy a Chrysler last week of the month, and that's when most of the sales come forward. And this will, of course, as Peter says, the story's tomorrow. It'll be Chrysler and GM. They'll be added to it. And so both of those companies are going to struggle the end of the month to sell cars. Ford tomorrow comes out with earnings. And we don't know, have no privy to it. We'll probably show they lost a lot of money in the first quarter, which means how close are they if this market continues? We said over the last few weeks, we've talked about this, Chrysler's 50-50. 50-50 may have gone to 49-51, not good.
Huh. Jason,
.com, as you say.
Go ahead, Matt.
Jason, I got a question for you. If they go through bankruptcy, what are the prospects there for somebody coming in and buying the hard assets like factories and things, you know, the Jeep brand? Are we going to see a yard sale going on, or you know, how are they going to, will they liquidate, or will they just seek reorganization?
Well, a liquidation is really ugly. I mean, you've got a million square foot plant in the middle of Illinois. What really is it worth? Mm-hmm. Who could use that? Certainly the Jeep brand. Of course, I was ridiculed last week. I believe the Jeep brand in a great market is worth $10.5 billion. I'd pay that much for it because it is a strong brand. But how do you break up the plants that make products for different brands? Perhaps this is all being negotiated behind the scenes, and this is all fanfare to get the bondholders to get down to a reasonable level. They want 65 cents on the dollar. They're offered 22 cents on the dollar. Is this to get the unions to comply in the end, especially in Canada? Is this all a big show? And then Fiat in bankruptcy takes them out and takes the stuff. If you're Fiat, why would you do it now? Why wouldn't you just wait?
Because this is what I keep arguing. Fiat's got the whole ball of wax under it's got the whole thing right now. You go to liquidation, anybody can start to pile in and buy stuff now. I think Marchionne wants it. I'll tell you why I think this announcement of a bankruptcy is a good thing. I don't ever think bankruptcy is good. But there's so much uncertainty, now we know what's going to happen. And also, when the administration says, hey, don't worry, union, we're going to guarantee the health care, we're going to guarantee the pension, boom, that takes them out of the picture, essentially. And now you can start to focus on the bondholders and on the banks. And you can start to say, hey, guys, we really are going to take this into a Chapter 11 restructuring, not a liquidation. And that's what the bankers right. are saying. You go to liquidation, we're first in line.
They are first in line.
We're first in line. Although, as I am fond of saying these days, if you think it's hard selling a house right now, try selling a car factory.
Right.
It ain't that easy. GM's been trying to sell Saab, Hummer, Saturn, they can't do it. Ford's trying to sell Volvo, haven't done it yet.
Try selling a headquarters in Auburn Hills, Michigan.
What, million plus
no one's gonna
square
buy
feet when across the freeway and another quarter mile is the Pontiac Silverdome where the Lions used to play that is worth zero.
Right.
So you got two zero properties. You can't turn them into casinos. We have too many. You can't turn them into hotels. There's nothing. We should turn it into a bombing range, perhaps.
Right. But and so, to your point, you know, car sales are going to die.
Right. They're going to die.
They're going to die once Chrysler is officially in all the car buying public's mind, going into bankruptcy. So that tells me the administration knows this is going to happen. Ergo, it is going to give Chrysler the debtor in possession financing that it needs to go through a bankruptcy. So I think we're really at the end of this whole morass, and now the new beginning is going to start. So I actually take this as a good sign.
That's sad when we take this as a good
sign.
Well,
I know.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
If Fiat keeps control of or keeps their hand in, it'll be good.
I think so.
If they don't.
But here's the other danger is now word's out that Fiat might be interested in getting Opel. And I'm going, whoa, guys, one war at a time. Fiat does not have the management bench strength to go take over Chrysler and take over Opel. I mean, they don't even have free time to run Fiat right now, much less two other car companies.
I agree. I think Marchionne's Linguini offensive, as I've called it, is, you know, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors for real. So it's like, well, we could do this and we could sort of do that. But what have they actually said they are going to do? Behind the scenes, maybe they've said a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But unless they keep control of this or keep their hand in it, it will go to Chapter 7.
The key for Fiat is to not get any skin in the game, too. I mean, he's trying to get in without risking any money. He wants to get the assets. I think the real wild card in all this stuff is Carlos Ghosn, what he would do if Chrysler went into liquidation and if there are some assets in North America that he would like to get, because after all, he was negotiating with Chrysler to have the Dodge Ram built as the Titan. So I think there's value there. There are assets there. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out, though.
Oh, there's assets, and assets will get sold. All I'm saying is that the bankers who think they can get 66 cents on the dollar, I think they're dreaming. I think they can get more than what the government's offering them, but the 66 or 65%, whatever it is, I think they're dreaming.
I mean, it feels like we're at a prom and everybody's brought a date and they're dancing with the date and winking at somebody else. Meanwhile, the whole ballroom's burning right now, and we'll see where it comes out.
Hey, one other quick topic that's hot in the chat, and then we'll call it a night. But what do you guys make of this GM shutdown for 9 weeks coming later this summer?
That's brutal. I mean, if Washington wants to find out what it's like for real, if GM goes belly up and the effect it'll have, they're going to get a test run with 9 weeks of all these plants being shut down. It's going to have a hugely negative effect all across the country. And that's going to be a big preview for Washington. It's just like, whoa, we better figure out something quick.
This is you try to be a cohesive industry among suppliers and dealers and automakers, and this is where it tears apart. Yeah. Mike Jackson of AutoNation comes out and said this is a great move because for the dealer body, they don't have to have product forced on them when their lots are full. They love it. Suppliers are going, I'm going out of business.
Yeah. Right.
I'm not getting any money now. I'm not making anything. And now for 20% of the year, I'm not going to have anything?
Yeah, no, this is really bad.
Yeah, and Matt, you were going to say?
Well, I think it's going to be really bad in the supplier industry. But keep in mind, a lot of those UAW workers are still going to get their supplemental unemployment.
They are.
And that's an issue.
Well, the good part of it is they aren't going to build inventory that will pile up. But still, I think it's going to devastate the suppliers, and that could set off a domino effect that will just...
And that's what the Senator Shelby didn't understand, that if these suppliers start falling like dominoes, it brings down the industry. You know, I talked about on the first show that the threat of Collins and Aikman going down when they were in trouble would have killed the 300 for Chrysler because they did all the interior, at least the IP and everything, and it would have taken a year and a half to resource that to another supplier. The car at its actual peak sales performance could have been killed by one supplier.
Here's what I read into the GM shutdown. It's the signal they are going into bankruptcy. And my figuring is this. GM knows once it announces it's going into bankruptcy, its car sales are going to collapse. I mean, they've already collapsed at Saturn, Saab, and Hummer with the talk that those brands are going to go away. GM is also talking about getting through a restructuring in about 2 months' time. Others say they're nuts, but that's what they think they can do. So if you know your car sales are going to collapse and you think it's going to take 2 months to get through this,
shut down.
Why not shut down for 2 months?
Yep.
I think this is, you know, the signal they are going to go into bankruptcy.
And a signal that the guys on top know what they're doing.
Right. Absolutely right, because they have got to signal to the Obama administration that they are right on top of this. They're making all the changes because they saw what happened to the last CEO who didn't give that perception of doing it. I think he was working his ass off to do it, but, you know, the perception in Washington was nothing was getting done.
It's going to be interesting to see with whatever plants end up getting closed for GM if Spring Hill is closed and really stick it to Corker. a senator from Tennessee who was a real jerk at first. I will say, though, I give him pretty high marks. He came to the Detroit show.
Yeah, he came to the show.
He came to the show, and he got engaged. And hopefully that his last part of his life in this industry saves that plan. But let's see.
Yeah, it was funny when all of a sudden, wait a minute.
I said, wait just a minute here.
Yosemite Corker.
Yeah, right. Oh, and then we got to do the survey results. Do we have those? Okay, bit.ly/live results. Let's see what our people said here. They rate Lexus. I mean, they pegged the needle on Lexus.
Who else on our panel here was way up on Lexus? Oh, that was me. Okay, yeah. I'm a populist.
Scion, very interesting. Way down. I mean, way down. Thumbs down from our viewers here tonight. And a pretty good thumbs up for Toyota. But, you know, if we had done the same survey a couple of years ago, I'm sure Toyota would have pegged the needle on that.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, pretty interesting. Well, we ought to wrap it up here. You know, we've gone a little over our hour. Again, folks, if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at twitter.com/AutoLine. You can follow Peter at twitter.com/AutoExtremist. And to follow Matt, it's a little bit more complicated to say this. It's twitter.com/road_AND, not the ampersand, _track. Let me say that again. twitter.com/road_AND_track. And you can follow all the stuff with Road and Track on Twitter that way. But, hey, let's wrap it up here. And Matt, thanks so much for Skyping in there from Newport Beach.
Thanks, guys. It's great being here. And I'm going to go see the Tigers play the Angels tonight. So.
You're going to Anaheim?
Going to Anaheim. Well, got my Tiger hat ready to go.
Way to go, Matt.
We won 11 to 12 to 10 last night.
Last night was a great game, yeah.
So Tigers are good.
Take care, Matt.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys too. Take care.
Visit our website, OuterLineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with OuterLine Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with OuterLine Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at OuterLineDetroit.tv.